You retired from active duty in 1996.
Five.
1995.
Yeah.
And ever since then, you have been the endorser for Fellowship of Grace Brethren Churches.
I have, yeah.
Which is basically, it describe what an endorser is, what he does.
It's interesting. You kind of have the opportunity, like you do in combat, to define your own role as a chaplain in combat. Nobody wrote the book. When I was in combat experience in Vietnam, I thought, nobody's ever written a book to tell me how to do this, so I'll write my own book. And you kind of do that. As a chaplain endorsing agent, I think you kind of write your own book. Now, I'm responsible for screening people who want to get into the military, to make sure they're fit for the military, to make sure that I'd like to work with that person as a military chaplain, and that they have their focus right so that they can fit into the military community, and you know, that they're physically qualified, that they're academically qualified. And so I need to do all of that to make sure this person is going to make a good chaplain. But for me, it's gone way beyond that. When I go out to visit soldiers that I have gotten in, or chaplains that I have gotten into the military, I want to meet their families. I want to take their families to dinner. I want to take the chaplains aside and talk to them and have quiet time with them, find out how they're doing, rely on my own experience as a chaplain, and maybe feedback some things that might be helpful. I want to meet their commanders. Sometimes when I have met commanders, they've been very blunt with me about the chaplains that I represent. Most of the time, it's glowing. Sometimes you hear that hesitation, and you know that this guy could be doing better than he is, and you might want to take him out afterwards and talk to him. And so, but I've tried to be a coach. I've tried to treat the chaplains that I endorse like I would if I was still a senior chaplain at Fort So-and-So. I would try to be their pastor, their father, their role model. And that's how I have viewed being an endorsing agent. Once again, I had to kind of learn on my own what that meant. I could see it from the inside looking out, but I had three or four different endorsers while I was on active duty. No two of them worked the same way. So I thought, okay, how am I gonna do it? And my experience of being on active duty, of being a senior chaplain, played in very quickly. And so I've tried to make it a relational role, and tried to yet not be just a big marshmallow, but to be firm if I felt like I needed to be with a guy. And I have had a couple of opportunities to be that way, and to talk to their commanders and give them feedback that I get from the commanders, and to go visit them, even if they're in Korea or Europe or wherever, have the presence with Martha with me to encourage them, because overseas deployments are not easy. And I went on one deployment to Korea, or not deployment, went on one trip to Korea where I met this couple that is, or one of our chaplain families, and the first thing out of her mouth was, no one has ever come to see us, only you. And we had a wonderful time together, and to this day, that gal gets anywhere near me, she hugs me and thanks me and for paying attention to her in her role as a chaplain wife. So there's a lot of ways you can be an endorser, but I wanted to make the very most out of it for my own satisfaction, as well as to be true to the expectations of the denomination. And if I need to call a chief of chaplains on behalf of one of my chaplains, I'll do it. And I have done it. And if I need to talk to the installation chaplain about one of my chaplains, I'll do it. And I have done it. And so because of my experience and my senior years, I feel fearless to wade into any situation and try to get it working the way I should.
Sounds like your job as an endorser, it sounds like you've just continued being a chaplain to chaplains.
That's the way I wanted it to be. Yeah. That's the way I wanted it to be.
So why do you care? Why do you care about the chaplain ministry? Who cares?
I care because I think it's the most remarkable mission field any Christian ever faced. And I'm talking about going to Timbuktu, I'm talking about going to Africa, I'm talking about going to Argentina, Brazil, wherever people go. I admire that. My own sister was a missionary in Africa, and I have been in Africa, but I admire that. But no one seems to have the potential outreach that a military chaplain has with his commander on down to the lowest ranking man and any chaplains that he supervises. One of the first things I did when I got on active duty, I preached the salvation message in the chapel. I was naive, you know, I just went in and preached the gospel, and a guy came forward. And the chaplain, who was my supervisor, said, "Man, you woke me up this morning." He said, "I haven't done anything like that for a long time." Well, I'll be dreaming chaplain stuff when the last breath I take. I know I will, and I make no apology for that. I just love the chaplaincy. I love the fact that we have a nation that is sensitive to the spiritual needs of their military. So sensitive that they will let us who are pastors come in on board and live and serve with the soldiers and be their pastors. It is so remarkable to me. You look around the world, nobody, no country has a chaplaincy that even begins to pair. Even the more civilized countries have no chaplaincy that begins to pair compare with ours. Well, right now, we have a senior chaplain from our faith group who is sitting next to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That's his assignment. And giving spiritual advice to the military leaders of our nation. He is a pastor. And where else in the world can you imagine that happening? And to talk to young chaplains and try to help them get through the tough times and help them get across the bumps in the road and encourage them. And if you can, help them with their career and push them on, you know, and write them good reports so they have a chance to be competitive for assignments and promotions. There's nothing to me. I can't imagine having lived my life any other way because I love it that much, even though I'm not wearing the suit anymore. Yeah.
You said earlier, you made a comment about no one had ever written a book before about how to be a chaplain in combat, so I wrote my own book. And that's literally true. A Soldier of God Remembers is the title of your book. Why did you write the book? And what would you encourage people to, why would you encourage someone to read the book? What will they get from the book?
Well, it was interesting. I never had any thought of writing a book. Two things were just flat brick walls. I wasn't willing to bump in them or try to climb over them. And one of them was, who knows me and who gives a rip about what I have to say about the military? Secondly, writing a book is a lot of work. And once you have it written, is anybody going to want to read it or want to buy it or anything? And why go through all of that? I had it in my heart, and that was good enough. So the guy I was working with, the guy by the name of Larry Chamberlain, he said, he and I would talk, and I would tell him some of the things that I've told you today, and he would say, you have to write a book. He said, this has to be recorded. I said, no. I said, I am not going to write a book. And he said, why not? And I said, just what I said to you. I said, nobody knows me, and it's too much work. He'd see me again a year later, have you started your book yet? No, I have no intention of writing a book. This went on for about 4 or 5 years, and finally he almost pushed me against the wall, and he said, I'm telling you right now, you will write a book. Took a deep breath, and I said, okay, that was in 2000. Remember, 2000 was supposed to be the big breakdown in the computers and all this stuff. You know, I thought, well, if we survive this, maybe I'll give it some thought. So I sat one down about a couple of weeks after 2000 got here and we didn't fall apart as a nation and all that, and I started writing. So I finished a chapter, and I called Martha in, and I said, let me read this to you and see if it makes any sense to you, but if I decide to try to write a book. So I read it to her, and I got choked up, and tears started running down my face, and she said, absolutely. So from that point on, I set a goal for myself of writing a chapter every day for the manuscript. In 45 days, I had my full manuscript for my book of over 300 pages. Now, since the book has been published, it has been published again the second time, and we're now on the downside of the published the third time. It is in Spanish, a remarkable story of a young woman in Argentina that loved Jesus. She spoke good English. She learned her English by watching American TV. And she said, "Can I translate your book?" And I thought, holy smoke, this is really big stuff. And I said, "Yes, please, go ahead." And so she did the best she could, being a non-American and a non-military person. So I got the manuscript and I gave it to a friend of mine who was used to do Spanish translation work for the Department of or the CIA or somebody. And he said, "Let me work on it." And he said, "I'll clean it up." And he said, "You'll have your Spanish translation." He worked about 70 hours on that book. And he got everything reoriented in a way that we would understand it as Americans about the military life that my dear little sweetheart in Argentina didn't understand any things. But she handed me, she mailed me the CD with the translation on it. That is now in its second printing, and it is in the hands of some of the best-known military leaders in Central and South America, and it has the feedback from that has been absolutely remarkable. So it has taken a journey that I never dreamed possible.
You talk about some of your interaction with international military leaders. Can you just describe a little bit about some of those opportunities, how they came about, and what you were doing?
With some other guys, when I retired, we formed a group called the International Association of Evangelical Chaplains. And the idea was we would meet with other evangelical chaplains somewhere in the world. We tried to do it every year. But then some of these guys said, "We need to know what you guys know about chaplain ministry. Why don't you come and train us?" Well, I got involved then in writing manuscripts of lesson plans and all this kind of stuff. And there was one guy and me. And we decided to be the IAEC, and we first of all went to Argentina together, and then later I went to Suriname. He was going to go by himself, but he got sick, and he said, "Would you go to Suriname and do this training?" So I went to Suriname by myself and did it, and then I went to Brazil with a couple of guys, and then we began to grow as a group. And we began to do training, and because of the fact that I was doing training, the locals would put us in touch with military leaders, and the military leaders wanted to know what we were doing. So we would go in and brief the military leaders, "This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to help get lay people or even ministers in your country to understand the spiritual needs of the military and find some way to get on board with you as leaders." And we were able to have a ministry with military leaders and even political leaders about the value of the chaplaincy and helping them as humbly as we knew how to say that no other country has a chaplaincy quite like the United States, and that's very precious to us, and we'd love to be able to share that with you. One story that really speaks to me is I was in Peru. And Peru has no military force. It's only a police force. And or is it Chile? One of the two countries I was in. Excuse me for waffling on this, but it was one of those two countries. And so I went in and talked to the deputy commander of all the forces in that country, and I think it was Chile. And so I gave him a copy of my book and thanked him. He had a crucifix on the wall, and he was a Catholic, but he said, "I'm not a practicing Catholic." He said, "It's just there." And I said, "Well, you might find some encouragement in the book that I've written." And I tried to write my book so that it would not be sectarian. I wanted people just to see me and God and feel the sovereignty of God in my life. And what they wanted to do with the book was up to them, and it was up to the working of the Holy Spirit as they read it. And I've got a file probably 2 inches thick of letters I've gotten from people who've read the book, who have really loved the book and have gotten something from it. But this man, the next morning, we saw one of the guys that was in the class, and he knew this man's daughter, this two-star general. And she said to him, And then he came over and said to us, you won't believe what happened yesterday after you guys left my dad's office. He sat there, picked up the phone, called his secretary and said, leave me alone the rest of the day. No calls. And read the book until he went home. When he got home, he had the book in front of him and read all evening. And she said, I looked over at him and I saw tears running down his face. And she said, I just thought you'd like to know that your book really had an impact on my dad. And that was the Spanish version of my book. And I can tell you that my book is in the hands of people around the world. It's in the Ukraine, it's in Mongolia, it's in Korea, it's in, you know, Japan, it's in all over the Near East and the Far East, and not the Near East, but the Far East. It has not made any inroads into the Near East, but a lot of people have read my book and written me very nice letters about what it meant to them. The 3-star general that retired me sent me a note after he read it, and he said, I enjoyed every minute of it. My seminary president said, I was angry when I got to the end because he said it ended too soon. And so God has taken that book and touched a lot of lives through it. And I hope encouraged chaplains who have read it or young chaplains that are thinking about the chaplaincy. I've sent out free copies to all these people. And a lot of times aspiring chaplains have read my book and said, boy, it really helped me understand what I was getting into. And thank you very much for writing it. We had four Roman priests in one of the Central American countries, and they wanted to take the course that was being offered, and they said, "Well, you'll have to read the book." They make that mandatory reading, and they all came back and said they had no idea what the chaplaincy could mean until they read my book. And two of them, when they tried to thank them for making them read the book, were wiping tears away as they did. So. God is full of surprises in all of life. I could not have been more surprised than I am sitting here telling you where that book has gone and how people have responded to it. And it's all to His glory.
God is just giving you remarkable life of incredible experiences and lots of heartbreak, lots of joy. And just an amazing opportunity to represent Christ within the military context. For you, what's the crowning satisfaction of your whole career as a chaplain? While you were active duty, what was the crowning satisfaction in that whole time?
Well, there were a lot. But I can tell you that I arrived at Fort Carson, Colorado, Fort Ord, California, from Korea. And I had been a lieutenant colonel in a slot for a major. I got to Fort Ord, and they told me I was going to another major slot. I was going to be a brigade chaplain. I was overslotted. I was a lieutenant colonel. It's not an honor to be a brigade chaplain when you've got more rank than the slot calls for. And I thought, you know what? I reminded myself, I came in to serve soldiers. What could I ask for that would be any greater than serving soldiers still as a lieutenant colonel when you normally get pushed up into more administrative kind of things? And so I was a brigade chaplain. I was having a wonderful time, and I loved it. I went out and ran with the soldiers every morning, you know, and the executive officer, who was a major, he couldn't even rate me because I outranked him. And yet he and I became very, very close. And I was sitting in the chapel one day, and the division chaplain was on his way out, and nobody knew who the division chaplain was going to be to replace him. And the post chaplain came in, and he sat down, and he said, anybody ever talk to you about being a new division chaplain? And I said, oh, sir, I said, there are rumors all over this installation. And I said, you know, anybody would love to be a division chaplain. And I said, so if I told you I wasn't interested, I would be lying. I said, however, I said, you have to make the choice. And I said, if you choose to pick someone else, I will respect it, and I'll throw my heart and soul behind his leadership. But I said, I'm asking you in the most sincere way, if I'm not your man to be the division chaplain, leave me alone. I don't care if I am overslotted in this brigade. I want to stay in this brigade. I want to be with soldiers, and I want to continue to serve. Oh, wow. He said, I'll get back to you. So about 4 or 5 days went by, and he came back, and he stuck his hand out and grabbed my hand, and he said, you're the division chaplain. That 20 months. You're only supposed to get 18 months as a division chaplain, but I got almost 24 months. Has to be the highlight of my career, because he appointed me as his assistant post chaplain, deputy post chaplain, and division chaplain at the same time, and we had about 24 chaplains there. So I had responsibility of oversight of all the chaplains as his representative, as well as being on a division staff, working with the division staff, and having 15 chaplains in the division that I was responsible for. That was a phenomenal honor. And I know that because I was rated well in that assignment, that had a lot to do with the fact that I was finally selected for full colonel. And it really opened a lot of doors for me. And I suppose the second one would be selection to be on the faculty at the Early War College, because I didn't want that assignment. But that assignment opened up doors for me of opportunity literally all over the world. After I was on the faculty at the War College and learned what I learned about that and was invited to lecture in various places because of my experience at the War College, man, it doesn't get any better than that.
If you could just give 3 pieces of advice to a chaplain that you think are the most essential pieces of advice, What would those 3 be?
I would say, first of all, don't even consider it unless you feel so passionate about it that you know you would not be fully satisfied doing anything else. That would be one thing I would say. Secondly, I would say never lose your focus of why you're there. And I've seen this happen too many times, where guys go into the chaplaincy and suddenly they get turned on to rank and promotions, assignments, awards. What happened to that passion of reaching soldiers for Christ? What happened to that? And I've seen them kind of filter off into a careerism that really turned me off. Even though I made colonel, I think I was not a careerist from the beginning. Just God dropped into some incredible things in my life. And third, but not the least, is your first priority has to be your family. And that sometimes is overlooked by guys who get so wrapped up in their job, and they will keep themselves in the office until it's 10 o'clock at night, and then they'll go home and grab a bite, fall in bed, and the kids don't see their dads, and they don't, because there are plenty of things to take you away from your family, legitimately. But you have to be very studied and very deliberate in giving your family quality time, especially your wife. Those kids grow up too fast, your marriage grows old too fast, and you have got to live every day as though your number one priority is not the military, it's your family. That's your greatest responsibility.
So those 3 would be never lose your focus.
Yep.
While you're there. Remember the call. For that for which you were called to do, and family first.
Amen.
You stand by that?
I do, absolutely. That's the way I tried to live my life and do my career, and I have no regrets. Those are my priorities.
If I don't remember those 3 pieces of advice, what are you going to do to me?
Yeah. Well, I will. I may have to remind you.
You'll hold me accountable to that.
I will. Do my best. I'll do my best. Yeah. I think. I really, going back to keeping your focus, is it's so easy to get distracted in the system that is so regimented, is so different, is so unique, has its own language, has its own culture. It's so easy to be co-opted by that and to be co-opted by careerism. And I've seen guys start out strong and wither because they lost their focus.